And live from our studios here in Accra, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program that speaks to the newsmakers themselves. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For today, we are looking at the economy and posing one big question as it gets to elections. Are we going to keep the discipline on it? And much, much more for you on this issue. As Behind the News on Radio Ghana, and as usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners. You can get in your test and they'll be treated as we go on. But don't forget, we'll also be looking at the Libyan situation. And the big question is still being posed. Is there an ulterior motive behind what NATO is doing? Or perhaps it is well in the interest of the Libyan people. But before then, we move on to the economy as we get to an election year. Watchers of the economy are often apprehensive as election year approaches. For them, this is when caution is thrown to the wind and economic discipline adhered to over a period is abandoned. Vice President John Mahama, however, says government will resist the temptation to increase expenditure during next year's general election. Other observers think a government seeking re-election will do the natural thing of courting favor. Behind the News explores how realistic it is for government to maintain discipline in expenditure where there is a high demand from various sectors. How can the situation be managed in the interest of government and the electorate? Professor John Bafo is a former finance minister. We'll be picking his views shortly and as to how he assesses the situation. But for now, we have on the line John Jinapor, the aide to the vice president, also on the line. Thank you so much for your time this evening, John.
Thank you very much.
Why is the vice president saying that this is the time to really keep the lid on whatever discipline has been maintained over the past 3 years or so?
Thank you very much for the opportunity. As you rightly said, the norm has always been that when you are getting close to election or in the year of elections, people tend to expect a lot from government, and that is when government also tries to meet the electorates and their expectation. And so sometimes you find government overspending. If you look at the 2008 budget, the NPP administration intended keeping the ceiling on a certain budget deficit. I don't have all the figures because of the short space of time you gave me, but eventually they spent beyond that and it was very high. And so you had to put in an austerity measure in subsequent years to deal with that deficit because you wanted to bring the economy back on track. And so, learning from that, the Vice President is of the view that whether elections or not, we must keep fiscal discipline and that we must ensure that we do not overspend both in monetary and the other areas so that we can keep a disciplined economy. When you overspend or push too much money into the system, what happens is that in the short term, because you've not produced to have a commensurate meeting in terms of the money you put in, you increase inflation. On the other hand, sometimes we tend to over award contracts, some of which are not really necessary or some of which we have not gotten enough funds for. And so the following year, you find out that it's quite difficult managing all this. And that is why he's advocating that as a nation, whether elections or not, we must keep that fiscal discipline so we can keep on track.
Yeah, you've raised the key issues here, but Professor John Bafo has been in a similar situation before. Let's see exactly how it was when it got to an election year. Professor John Bafo, you are welcome to Behind the News this evening.
Thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And we hope you are doing well too. But to that question, how easy is it for you when you are in the seat to maintain that fiscal discipline?
Well, you see, look, I think some of these excesses that are alleged to be associated with elections are really not the case. You see, there is usually, when you look at the election cycles that we've gone through, is the 2000 elections And the 2008 election that is associated with this high expenditure that people have been referring to. But if you look at those years, they were also years where there was a worldwide cyclical economic difficulties. 2000, there were, and you remember the exchange rate was just jumping here and there because of oil prices and things like that. 2008, it was also very, very similar, you know, when we had a lot of difficulty with oil imports, the prices going up high to about $145 per barrel. And then we also, you know, there was also a hiccup from, from the energy crisis of 2007, you know, that actually jumped into 2008. Food prices were up and things like that, you know. So there is also the cyclical dimension of it. And I'm glad that the gentleman there has also mentioned about the likelihood that people will spend more because of maybe trying to meet certain promises of government. But the point is that, you know, it is a very difficult thing. I don't expect it this year because that cyclical element will be out of it, because this time around the economy, the external market is very, very good, so there will be no problem from the external forces. But the difficulty that I anticipate for this time around is just only about maybe the labor front. You know, normally, you know, towards the election years, the governments are a little bit vulnerable, and therefore, you know, the demand, especially from the labor front, is very, very high. Where, especially this time around, maybe the single spine is still hanging around. You know? And of course, as he rightly said, you don't want to infuriate the voters that much. Yeah. So that one is something is very difficult, you know, to resist.
Professor Kembako, you moved us to a very important point that we would never have lost sight of. That is the demands on government pays, especially by workers. Is it manageable, especially where they are holding their fist or thumbs to you and telling you that this is it, it is swaying in a different direction if you don't respond to us?
Mm-hmm.
Can you really do something about that one?
It is not easy at all. You know, it is not very easy at all. And indeed, you know, what we can do is normally not to allow those demands, you know, spread it over a period of time so that they don't coincide with the election cycle. If they do, governments find it very difficult, and the resistance is, you are vulnerable, just like a union. They want to strike when you are weak, and they will just certainly strike at that point. You know, so normally what you have to do is to spread the risk over a long period. But for now, I think the government is moving, is pushing this labor issue further and further towards that day. And I think maybe they should do something more about it now, and so that it actually, softens the pressure come 2012. Otherwise, you know, it's something that will naturally come in, and that is the nature of the labor. The strength of labor.
Yes, Prof. Just hold on for a moment as we go back to John Jinapo on the line. John, you've heard Professor Jambafo talking about a real situation. That certainly, if you say, I'm not awarding contracts, at least workers will say we need to have a take-home pay. In that case, how do you manage it?
I think I admire the way Prof handled this issue. It's non-partisan, it's very, very open and friendly, and very, very objective. Because if you look at 2000, oil prices had jumped from about $11 to about $30-something dollars. Our cocoa prices had dropped significantly, gold had dropped significantly, and so we had a major challenge. And in the next election year, governments are always very careful, because that is when the electorates can punish you, and so you try to make amends. And in making amends, you either borrow so much or put in so much cash. But eventually, it hurts the economy. In 2000, even though gold prices was quite good, the crude oil prices went so high, around over $100, and so that was equally a difficult scenario for the MPP. And so you realize that
in 2004, they did not handle the economy compared to 2008 in terms of the deficit. I agree with you. Fortunately, in this year, we may not be hitting there, even though crude oil is still hovering around $100. We may not go that far. And that is why we need to be putting in place certain measures. And that's why we have the stabilization fund, which will ensure that in case we have such hikes, we can position ourselves in the interim. And that's also why we try to go for a certain form of hedging so that we can be a bit cushioned. And so once all of it, all politicians begin to talk this way, then we'll be making a headway rather than politicizing everything. And I'm happy he's bringing on single spine because the government is going to commit a lot of money. I mean, some of which very difficult decisions have to be taken because normally when you get to elections, that is when labor funds begin to agitate more because they believe that that is where government is weak and that is when government is listing a lot because you are in the driving seat and sometimes the opposition also fuels it. And so if we can take off the politics out of it and discuss this thing in a more objective manner such that eventually over a long period of time we can have sustainable economic development, I believe that as a nation we'll be doing ourselves a lot of good.
Yeah.
So when we increase salaries and you don't have a commensurate increment in terms of productivity, what will happen is that there will be demand pull inflation and eventually the money people take in terms of the purchasing power, it will be reduced. And so whilst we agitate for salaries, we should also look at productivity at the various workplaces. If you go to government agencies, do they really give up their best? Are they really committed to working to ensure that productivity goes up? I think that these are the issues that we can interrogate further and find a way of ensuring that we pay workers what they are due and also demand from them the services that they ought to provide the state. So collectively, we can make some progress.
John, you've spoken of the stabilization fund. And here is the situation where we are yet to migrate a chunk of workers onto the single spine salary structure. And that will come with its attendant demands. Already, some are on, but are not still satisfied with the pace that they take home. In that case, what do you do? Is the situation already not presenting a challenge?
That is why we have governments. Governments must ensure that they do the necessary balancing. One, you must satisfy workers. Two, you must ensure that you maintain prudence in terms of the fiscal regime and also ensure that looking into the future, you don't overburden yourself. And that's why Prof is saying that, look, begin to tackle single spine now. Because when you push it and push it, eventually it will get at you. Don't also forget that single spine, if my memory serves me right, it's a five-year program. It's not a one-off event. And so as we keep putting on people, we make the necessary adjustment. And so let's see how we can handle it. It's a very challenging and difficult task. But once we are committed, once there's a political will, we also hope that the labor front would understand and appreciate the difficulty that we find. Because look, salaries, whether you like it or not, is what comes into the national kitty that you can pay. There's nothing else you can do apart from using what you have in the national kitty. And so ultimately, you'll be looking at growing the economy, generating more revenue, because with the rebasing of the economy, the GDP is very big, but then revenues do not increase instantaneously. And so that means that there is even a mismatch there. Others are trying to say that, look, let's find more ways of ensuring that we widen the tax net, getting more revenue, pay workers, and as I said, demand from workers what they are supposed to do. If you're a government worker, you just don't go and sit in the office, close at 3 o'clock, and then expect that you get what ought to be given somebody from the private sector.
John,
so let's make all this job competitive,
okay.
And I believe that we'll make some progress.
John, just hold on. I want to go back to Prof on an issue. Prof, thanks for still holding on. We've spoken about the rebasing of the economy. Naturally, many things are being expected, especially from the average person who wants to see an improvement and all. We are picking from your experience. You've been at the National Development Planning Commission
before.
So looking at the way forward, how we can constructively tackle some of these issues, how do we craft them into the policies we already have in place so that no matter which government is there, we know this is the way we are going. No matter what pressure, this is how we are tackling it.
You know, for me, this economy is a very vulnerable economy. It is an economy that depends on markets that are outside the commodity markets, gold, cocoa, oil, now oil, you know. And these prices are determined by somebody maybe in Washington or in New York or in London or somewhere else. And we are at the end here, we just receive what that they are sell, they want us to sell our products for. So whenever there is a problem there, I mean, we are at the receiving end here. I think it's about time for us to transform this economy to one that does not depend on external shocks, where we can actually absorb the shocks. If we are industrializing, let's go ahead that way so that we can all compete in the marketplace. That is a long-term solution to our problem. We don't have to be a country where we only rely on who determines the price of cocoa, who determines the price of oil, who determines the price of gold and things like that. Unless we sit down and say, look here, let us also compete with China. You know, they are bringing us shirts, they are bringing us belts, they are bringing us shoes, they are bringing us this. Let us also go in there and compete with them. You know, it's, unless you get to that point, unless we move away from a market that is based on commodities, and but that a market that is actually industrial in nature, we will forever be facing this difficulty. Now we are very, we feel good this time around because of price of cocoa going up, price of gold going up, price of all the things that we are exporting going up. As soon as they start dipping down, we'll be in trouble again. You know, so I think that the way forward is to actually have an economy that is devoid, that is not determined by prices in the commodity market.
Yeah, it is good, but the political aspect too has touched on. Will the opposition be prepared to help government to tell workers that this is the situation? Or perhaps opposition will need to also get to power. So naturally, this is the time to exploit the situation.
Well, what I think is this. I think that, the commission that I used to be the head, the National Development Planning Commission, should not be politicized, you know. That commission should be a national, a state commission, not a commission that is headed by anybody who has sway over political power. Let us have, and as soon as we do that, and then we come out with, you know, an agenda for the nation. It is something that we all accept, we all buy into, and that political thing is removed completely from it. When we do that, we'll be able to, you know, have something that both the minority and the majority, the opposition and the government in power agree with, and that should be the way to go, to forge a national consensus and then move on. And you see, a national consensus of that nature, labor is part of it, government is part of it, other people, so we have a national consensus based on all the thinking of these stakeholders. And that is what should drive the country. I mean, when governments come in, they should actually do what this national agenda proposes that they should do, maybe quite slightly differently from what the other party will have done it. But at least the end result should be seen to be the same. Unless you get that national consensus, you know, we'll be coming in, somebody starts building a road from here to B, then the other one comes and says, no, that's not my priority, I'll go from A to Z, and the other one comes, I'll go from A to C. You know, you move one step forward and one step backwards. It will take us for a very, very long time for us to develop this economy. So I think there has to be some bipartisan approach to national development agenda. Unless we do that, we'll be wasting too much time.
Okay. Prof, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
You're most welcome.
Professor Jam Bafo is a former finance minister and also a member of parliament. He's also been in the seat at the National Development Planning Commission before. John Jinapo, we are still with you. Quickly, before you go, we are talking about national consensus. How transparent will government be with opposition so that in talking, they will also be supporting what is good for all?
I think that my belief is that we should not leave issues of national interest, issues of national development to only politicians. Because maybe, but for somebody like Professor Jam Bafo,
and maybe myself. Hitherto, what we would have seen is that I begin to blame the MPP, the MPP man begins to blame the NDC man, and we mess ourselves up and then go and nobody benefits. But when we have that approach where civil society, the media, and everybody is involved towards driving our national development, I believe that will make progress, even our national psyche. Because as it stands, people are more inclined to buy imported products than even made in Ghana products. We are not even proud of made in Ghana products because of the way we've probably done our politics over the years. And so I agree with Prof. that, look, you must begin to look at some of these things because you can't export all these primary products in their raw form. Secondly, you must ensure that you cut down on importation, especially in areas that you have comparative advantage. Why must you import that amount of rice, that amount of sugar, that amount of poultry? I mean, the amount you spend importing all this, when you add them, is more than what all the donor agencies give us. And yes, we always go cap in arm. But if we want to develop, it means that we must begin to make certain sacrifices. It means that we must begin to consume our own local products. And so it's a holistic approach that all of us can take and finally ensure that we do not have a winner-take-all situation. Because if the MPP comes to power, usually what will happen is that if you don't belong to that fraternity, especially if you're in the NDC, you might not get anything. Vice versa, if the NDC is in power and you are not from within the NDC fold and you are probably from MPP, you might not also get anything. And so if I wouldn't get anything, my interest is let me pull you down and also come and occupy that. But when we begin to have that bipartisan approach, build bridges and ensure that, look, when governments move from political parties, we quickly transform and ensure that we carry the whole nation along. I believe that the unnecessary political tension will go down a bit, and then we can focus more on developmental issues that would eventually transform the lives of our people. I think that when we begin to look at it from that angle, it will help us. But whether we like it or not, the electorates are getting sophisticated, and we, the politicians, would have to adapt and change to suit them, because you can't keep deceiving the people. Eventually, it will catch up with you. And I believe that we are making some progress.
We want to thank you very much, John Jinapo, to the Vice President, as we tackle all these issues. You are on Behind the News. We are taking a quick break. There are other stories waiting, but we'll be picking the views from Imani very soon. But the other stories waiting, well, what do you think? If there is a law on homosexuality soon, what should it be? The Christian Council expresses some concerns over there. And the Libyan situation, who is right and who is fighting for which people, or perhaps pursuing an ulterior motive? A quick break. We'll be back.
You're listening to Behind the News, coming to you live from GBC Accra.
Well, so looking at the economy in an election year, Kofi Bento is with Imani as the Vice President, and he's also joined us on the line. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you too for having me.
Yeah, you might have listened to how our two first gentlemen handled the issues as we tackled them. For you as Imani, what do you think should be the best approach in handling an election year and fiscal discipline?
Thank you very much. The general view is that we should not, in the name of an election, derail our economy. It takes quite a bit of effort to get the stability that we have now. And the tendency is that they will all be eroded because of the election. As for what politicians will do, frankly speaking, we are all good judges of, you know, what they say and what they do. So I don't have much to place on what they've said. But I think that we are growing and we should get to the point where we don't just whittle away all the gains that we make simply because we are looking for an election victory.
Yeah. We are growing, but naturally there are things that we should see too. If there are contracts, we must naturally finish them. Even if they are slow, we want to hasten the process. If there are workers, we want to cater for them. Things that people will say are justified expenditure, but sometimes so much during election year. What do we do with them?
The point is that is why we have planning, okay? Whatever has to be done, you can plan it ahead 2, 3, 4, 5 years, okay? So if we plan well,
Then from the 1st of January on 2012, we will know exactly what we will do, and we can calculate and know the effect of all of those things on the economy. The problem is not spending or not spending. The problem is not whether there are contracts or not, no contracts. The problem is extra budgetary spending, which is inflationary in its effect. Okay? So those are the real issues. And if we desist from extra budgetary spending, which tend to be inflationary for the purpose of election, we should be fine.
Yeah. So that is what you are looking at.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping for.
Have you presented some papers on it already to government and perhaps to the opposition too, in trying to get all together?
We haven't. We have a huge bureaucracy that is supposed to do all those things. The Ministry of Economic, Finance and Economic Planning. We have the planning agencies. We have all kinds of institutions and people who are supposed to do this work. And frankly, even though we are happy to work beside them as civil society organizations, we think that people have a primary responsibility to plan and execute these plans even without the input of civil society. And I hope that they will do that.
Well, naturally, we'll be looking at this issue some other time as matters in relation to it come up. But for now, I want to thank you very much for your opinion here.
Thank you, too.
Kofi Bento is Vice President of Imani Ghana. And we are moving on to our next story on Behind the News. The issue of homosexuality in Ghana has been a thorny one among Christians, Muslims and moralists on one hand, and human rights activists on the other. In the recent past, some notable members of the clergy have come out strongly against the practice, saying it runs contrary to all that is divine and moral. But thinking that their message and crusade against homosexuality have still not sunken yet, the Christian Council, the umbrella body of Christians in Ghana, today addressed a news conference in Accra to voice out its displeasure over the issue. The General Secretary of the Council, Reverend Dr. Fred Degbe, warned government and lawmakers against any attempt to pass a pro-homosexuality law. If this is done, in his words, the wrath of God will come upon the nation and the consequences will be unbearable. We have now joining us Reverend Dr. Fred Degbe to tell us much more about their perspective on the issue. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Some are asking, the issue has been discussed back and forth. Is it now a panic button being pressed because you might have heard something?
No, not really. What was done today was not just the Christian Council of Ghana, but rather Christian community. Christian Council was there, the Ghana Pentecostal Council, the Independent Church as well, so there, along with Anglican Church Presbyterian. So this cut across. And so it's taken us a while for us to come together as different councils to express our opinion and our views about this homosexual issue.
Do you think perhaps the lawmakers and the necessary authorities have been slow in defining their position on this one?
Yes, because there is no official position on this. We know that there is the law. And we also know that people have been lobbying and saying all kinds of things about homosexuality. But we have not had any official position. So this is our opinion that we are expressing today.
Yeah. Some are talking about the health consequences and all. And even given the proposition that it might be right for those who practice to be in that situation. Do you agree with them? They say it's a free society and all.
It's a free society, but things that people do has implications. And that's what we're talking about, the health implications. If somebody is practicing something and the person falls ill, nobody is an island. It affects us because you go to the hospital, we all contribute and pay for it. And while stand with, even some of the people who practice homosexuality are also bisexual. So you do it across, so you have your partner who is homosexual, then they also go to the other partners who are bisexual. And this spread, and we're putting statistics that seem to suggest that homosexuals do not practice only with their partners, but with other people as well, multiple partners. And this has serious implications for our society.
Yeah. Reverend Idegbe, how strong has the Christian community been and the leadership in tackling that issue even from the base before it is raised to the level of government?
We've been teaching about it all across the country. It's been the stance of the church about this. I mean, against it for a very long time.
Have you got some response, because this is not something practiced openly? Do you get people coming to you for assistance because you touched on it and it affected them?
Yes, some of our churches and clinics have reported that they have people coming to them for help.
And what type of help?
There are people who want to come out of it. And where we have clinics, and that's part of what we're seeing, that people have been sodomized. We have them wearing pampers. They have all these infections, sexually transmitted diseases. And they go to this clinic and they report what happened to them and why they want to get out of it.
Yeah. Reverend Fredegbe, before we even come to you on the next one, if you can go down on the volume of your set a little, because there is a little echo in the background that is disturbing the clarity of your voice. But
okay.
As we raise this, some are giving examples of what is happening outside, where even people who are gays are getting whatever chance to even lead congregations and all. And they are saying that perhaps that is their modern world, and that is gradually what is creeping into our society. Are we yielding to it here?
No, we are not yielding to it. Because as you may be aware, our statement said that we know these things are happening elsewhere. And we also know that there are churches that give leadership positions to homosexuals in the church. And wondering what type of example they are setting for church members and the world at large. So we do not know of any church community in this country where homosexuals are in leadership position. We are not aware of it. But we're saying that it is not something we think should be approved or should be endorsed.
Yeah. You think Ghanaians should vote against any politician who supports homosexuality? How do you monitor what they do with this one?
The monitoring is difficult, we all know, by the stance that we take, and that we teach our people. This is just to show how strong we are about this issue, that we should not tolerate it. It should not become a law in this country. We know it exists. We know people practice it. But we should not open the Pandora's box and say that because it is being done, we accept it as people and as society.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us this evening on the line, Reverend Dr. Fredegbe, head of the Christian Council of Ghana, on the issues of homosexuality. But are the lawmakers going to take it that way? That is the suggestion, or perhaps they also have their stance already on the issue. Kuntu Blanson is a member of Parliament, and he's also on the line. Well, thank you so much for your time once again.
Hello, thank you very much.
Yes. Many people are contrasting the issues of homosexuality, especially when it comes into the public domain, with human rights and non-respect of it. How does it relate to homosexuality?
My brother, every country has a law. And even in the good old books, the Bible, indicate that man will marry a woman. A man will not marry a man. And a woman will not marry a woman. It's something that people ascribe to themselves by their own thinking and their own doctrine. And as in Ghana, despite that we have a sacred state where we have freedom of worship, freedom of association, freedom of doing everything. But notwithstanding, none of our laws indicate that homosexuality is permissible in this country. And there's no government in this our soil will permit such an act. So anybody who perpetuates homosexuality, then he's going against the creation, which in the end is not augur well for the society.
When you mention it that way, some may quickly come in to say that perhaps it may be an individual opinion because the world seems to be moving in a particular direction. As a house, do you have a common position on it?
Well, my brother, the issue has not been tabled in the house as a motion. So for that matter, I cannot say there is a common denominator that the house has decided on. But in my opinion, as a citizen and as a member of the house, when you assess majority of the house will not go in for homosexuality because it's something that is against humanity.
Yeah. So are there moves to get it into the house for you to even look at officially?
That is why I told you that we are a lawmaker and we are living in individual constituency. And as the feeling of my constituents indicate that they abhor homosexuality. So there is no way as a leader of the house or a member of the leadership will go, in for anything that contradicts the laws of the land. Because homosexuality is not in our constitution.
Yeah. Mr. Kuntu Blanson, there is this other issue that is so thorny. And people say sometimes it is tied to some aid that you get from certain agencies. That if you try not to respect the human rights of people who claim they are homosexuals, then it means that you are not getting some package from them. Have you in any way heard about such enticements?
My brother, let him tell you. I've not heard anything, but let him go into the whole book. It tells you that hard work will not give you anything, but the blessings of the Lord make somebody rich or improve the nation. Have you understand me?
Yes.
If they are going to give us aid, because we support homosexuality before they give us the aid, then that aid should go. God will take care of this land. Have you understand me?
Okay.
But I will tell you that the clergy has a long way and a hard work or daunting task for them to undertake in this country because majority of this country are Christians and Muslims. And you remember that we have shepherds and we have flocks. So the clergy is there to shepherd us. So they should use all, available resources at their disposal. So when they mount the pulpit, they should be able to transform the society. That's what God is looking from them. So that we can get a society with morality, with all what the Bible indicates to us. So at the end of the day, this woman's sociality will be the thing of the past.
Yeah, I put this question to Reverend Dr. Fred Degbe on it. But let me ask you directly, from perhaps your coin of vantage, have you also seen them doing it strongly as to keep it where it is and not come up?
Pardon, come again?
Yes, I'm asking whether from where you observe the clergy from, are they also doing it well?
Well, my brother, you are in Ghana, you heard that. Even in America recently, that a church, a Presbyterian church in America, they were going to ordain homosexual pastors in order to bless marriages of homosexuals. It's not part of the Antichrist. So if in the kingdom of God, such a thing is taking place, you cannot disassociate yourself saying that, oh, this thing is happening in America, it's not happening in Ghana, because there's one Christ we are all serving. So if it is bad, we have to condemn it. We should condemn it. We should not say that, it's American Presbyterian who are doing this. So we Ghanaian Presbyterian, we disassociate ourselves with this. I don't buy it because there's only one God and there's only one Christ.
So for you as a member of the house, you are already against it, no matter how it comes, in what way?
Any bill that they bring it, if it is not going to develop humanity, it's rather going to destroy the kingdom of God, I will be against it. Even if it's for my president, I will work against it.
We
are not serving man, we are serving God. And at the end of the day, whatever we do, we'll give account to it. And that day, nobody will be there to defend you. It will be between you and your God.
Thank you very much, sir.
God bless you.
George Kuntu Blanson is the majority chief whip in Parliament. Well, we've heard from one reverend minister. We have another, but this time also in the August House. Professor Mike Okwe is Deputy Speaker of Parliament. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much, Professor.
Hello, Prof.
Yes, good evening.
Yes, good evening, sir. Well, we're asking your colleague on the other side, but he was saying that there's not been any move to get any act or bill into parliament in relation to homosexuals. Have you maybe by chance spotted any?
In fact, I respect the Honorable Kuntu Blanson a lot for the statement that he categorically made. And I'm of the same opinion. And, you know, people should learn to take stand. In America, your voting record is part and parcel of you. And you are judged by it. Because they take these things down individually. And I commend him for what he's saying. Look, what these people are doing is terrible. Can you imagine two Ghanaian families? They are called Diawari. We are going to have a marriage. And then a man is sitting here, and a man is sitting there, and then we are going to marry. It is against our culture, our tradition. It is alien to us. And it's totally unacceptable. In this country, too, coming to talk about religion, we are mainly Christians and also Muslims. It is worship of God on both sides. We are both agreed by way of the Holy Word without any contradiction that a man shall marry a woman. God created man and woman out of his own wisdom. In fact, there is only one. And God realized that that which has been done was not good. That was when there was no woman. And he created man, a woman for man. The two shall be one. And the man shall live and cleave to his wife. Now, you are telling us that we should do this thing. Man to man, woman to woman. It is an abomination. And the fact that some people are doing it as the abomination is neither here nor there. Let me just bring about one or two of those arguments that they used to support it. They say, well, some people are born with hormonal problems and physical differences, and they have a tendency towards, is a woman, but a tendency towards a woman. He's a man, but he's got a tendency towards a man. Because of certain deficiencies. Fine, then treat him or her medically. If a person is sick, you don't use that as a justification. Whatever society will do to treat our sick brothers and sisters, let us treat them medically or psychologically. You know, when people are mad or insane, the little psychology that is left, they said, if a person is mentally imbalanced, you treat him neurotically because it is a disease of the mind, or you treat him psychotically by way of a psychosis. That is psychological. The person is imbalanced. And if we lead them to the appropriate authorities, they will know how to treat that people. But you don't use it to justify a situation and say, let them do it because they have a problem. If everybody has a problem, he says, for me, I have a problem of inclination towards weed or cocaine or whatever. That is for me. Me, when I don't have it, I'll be sick. But you know, don't take those drugs. That is simple. So let him have it.
Okay.
We don't do that as a way of regulating the affairs of society.
Okay.
And if you look at the Bible itself, it adds homosexuality as the abominations and those who are going to go to hell. That says the word of God. I'm not saying it. The word of God is saying it. Then who is warned? He won't be the Bible or us.
Prof, we seem to be losing you on the line. But I guess the point is very well made as to your stand and also looking at it, the way it will be tackled, assuming it is getting into the house. We want to thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you. I thank you. God bless you.
Professor Michael Kwe is the second Deputy Speaker of Parliament on the issue of homosexuality and the Christian Council pushing that there should be a definite stand on it. Some of your testimony on Behind the News. In fact, promoting homosexuality in Ghana will bring God's wrath on us and should not be entertained at all by a boy Elisha, Marketing One, Sunyan Polytechnic. Akansaki from Kumasi, I do support the Christian Council 100% for that is the truth. Some of us will stand by the Christian Council for that bold decision. And Morris Baby, Sunyan, I strongly support the Christian Council. Government must take a firm stand, coming from Morris Baby. And Kisley, gayism and lesbianism is a canker. We must fight it with vigor. Elias and Tamale sent in that one. And that is what they all say, but overspend during election year. NDC is no different. Politicians are the same. Morris Babyface from Sunyan sent in that one in relation to our first story. Prof and John, we are not getting it right. We'll try to get that one for you, and then we read it. But let's put it on record that there's been people who defend this one also strongly. We tried to get some of the campaigners on this one. Unfortunately, we were not able to get someone who was prepared to come out openly to comment in relation to human rights. Behind the news on Radio Ghana. A quick break. We'll be back.
You're listening to Behind the News, coming to you live from GBC Accra.
And to a foreign story in relation to Libya. NATO's bombardment of Libya, is it a failure or at worst, is it another cause for achieving the objective of an international organization? There are mixed reactions to this issue. However, after several months of attack on Libya, the pro-Gaddafi forces and the supporters of the Libyan leader seem to tell NATO that no amount of superior military technology can break their resolve and willpower. Whilst Muammar Gaddafi has vowed never to leave Libya, his ancestral home, the supporters of the Libyan leader have been organizing demonstrations to sympathize with him. The pro-Gaddafi forces have also been experiencing mixed fortunes in defeat and victory. The question is NATO in for a long confrontation with Libya? What about those who believe the situation in Libya is a conspiracy by the West to intervene militarily in any African country at will? Dr. Vladimir Entredanso is with the Legon Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy, LESIAD. He has been writing on the Libyan issue for some time and is on the line with us. Thank you so much, Dr. Entredanso, for your time. Hello, Doctor. I guess we are having a few challenges with Doctor on the line. We'll try to quickly get back to him to comment on that particular issue.
You're listening to Behind the News, coming to you live from GBC Accra.
Well, we are getting the signals now that we've managed to re-establish contact with Dr. Entredanso on the line. Thank you so much, sir, once again. Hello, Doc. Well, a bit of a challenge there with that particular line leading to Dr. Entredanso. Quickly pick a quick story from Ibrahim Kwatin and then get back to Doc on the line. Well, I hear it's been reestablished, but this time we have Manfred Ashiboye Mensah, who is on the line before we try to reestablish contact with Entredanso. Manfred Ashiboye Mensah, you are a lecturer at the Institute.
Yeah.
Of professional studies. We want to welcome you to the show this evening.
Thank you.
The big questions are being posed everywhere we pass. Is NATO justified in its present wave of attacks against Libya?
Well, in my opinion, I think that yeah, they are justified. I think they are justified. Why? Because, I mean, Colonel Gaddafi has lost legitimacy, you understand. In the moment you start turning your own guns on your own people, why? Yeah, you don't have the right to rule them any longer. And after having been there for 42 good years, I don't think that, I mean, he has anything again. So, I mean, he must go.
Yeah, but some are saying that establishing legitimacy of whatever force that is trying to help the people should depend on the people themselves and not an outside force that sometimes is misconstrued as someone attacking a different nation. Do you share that view?
That
perhaps they also have another ulterior motive for invading Libya and not just supporting forces against Gaddafi.
Well, in the Asana analysis, at least as a nation, in whatever venture that you find yourself, I mean, in the final analysis, the benefits must inure to your own people, you understand? So that whatever they are also doing over there, yes, fine. If you look at the generality of it, yeah, they are all there in order to ensure that, I mean, there's democracy or maybe he stops killing his own people. But in the final analysis, at least the benefits must inure to the American or the West, so to speak.
Yeah. So the natural question, why should it be a NATO interest and not the interest of the Libyan people or Africans?
No, but when the crisis started, where was AU? AU was nowhere to be found, and the man was just about to, I mean, he just started killing his own people. I mean, what would have happened if the NATO hadn't intervened? What do you think would have happened in Benghazi? He would have killed all of them. You understand? AU was just looking on. Nobody was saying anything. People were just shouting and dancing all around. But at the end of the day, nothing happened. And when it happened in the final analysis, it is the same Western countries that, I mean, will go and beg them to come and, I mean, intervene. I mean, consider what happened in Cote d'Ivoire. In the final analysis, it was the Western countries that came in. You understand? The AU, we don't have the resources. Secondly, the AU is only there, I mean, for its kind. You understand? They are not there for the ordinary people. AU also has lost legitimacy completely. In even though we all agree that they don't have the resources, but AU, they don't represent the ordinary people. They just represent their kind. You understand? So in all these, in the final analysis, it's the Western countries that will come and help us.
Okay, Manfred, yeah. Please hold on the line. We have Dr. Nchidanso also joining us, Doc. We have been told it's legitimate because the AU won't act. They are tied down by perhaps resource challenges and all. Should it be the way we understand it?
If you want to talk about Libya and legitimacy, then yes, it was legitimate because it was backed by international law or sort of the UN Security Council brought resolution 1973 and NATO took it upon themselves to implement resolution 1973. So that is legitimate. Again, in international law, we allow what we call the right to protect. If a country is unable to protect its citizens, the world must come and protect its citizens. But my beef with the NATO bombardment is that it's gone beyond Resolution 1973. Libya has every right to stop the insurrection in its own territory. But it is the manner in which the insurrection was being pursued that brought the attention of the UN. But then, it didn't say that they must go in for regime change. It didn't say that they must go in for assassination. It didn't go in to say that they must also kill civilians. And so the point is this, that what is happening is that they are interested in regime change. They are meeting with the opposition. They are pledging some monies left and right. So as you said earlier on, and that friend of mine was also saying, he agrees that it must inure to the benefit of the West. That's wrong. Who says that Western democracy should be a democracy for everybody and everywhere? American democracy is not the same as British democracy. Shall we say then that Americans must attack Britain? I strongly suspect that what we are doing is that we are exacerbating the situation in Libya. The Libyan people are not the ones who are being emancipated from any monster. Personally, if you ask me, I don't like Gaddafi. But I would also say that I would like anybody who come and subjugate the Libyans as a second whatever it is. So that's not the interpretation. It's not true that the West is saving the Libyan people for any democracy. Who understands democracy better than their own people who know what to do? So I thought what we should have used was the carrot to exit Gaddafi so that not very many more people would die before Gaddafi leaves and after Gaddafi leaves. What is happening is that now Libya is more polarized, seriously polarized. And if the West were a group of people who really love democracy, why didn't they go to Bahrain? What is happening in Bahrain was worse. Why not Syria? So we don't have any modicum of standard for any kind of democracy through Western. What I see is that it is because of Gaddafi as a person they hate. One. Two. Because they want their companies finally to come and repair Libya and get their oil. And three, they want Arabism to end so that they can have their way. And this is what some of the Arab countries are resisting and resisting here. We should take a cue from Iraq. Is Iraq better today than under Saddam Hussein, even though we know he was a monster? So let us be very careful about what we are saying. Iraq is not Iraq today. And if the whole of the Arab world goes bad, it is we in Africa, it is we, the poor countries, who will suffer. The West will come back and rebuild Libya. When Iraq was tottering, American companies were sharing the booty in East Iraq. So let's be very careful about how we look at the invasion.
Just a moment, let me go back to Manfred. Manfred, you've heard the argument of Dr. Nchidansu that perhaps extra interest is being pursued here. How do we make it work in the interest of the Libyan people? I'm posing that question again.
Yeah, but of course, I don't think that we can use the situation in Syria and Iraq in order to justify what is happening in Libya. You understand me? But I know that in the final analysis, it's the Libyan people who have the final say in deciding who should be their leader. You understand?
Yeah.
But at least for 42 years, this man has just been there doing whatever. Look at the situation that he's trying to line up his own son to take over from him. You understand? I cannot use these situations in order to justify what is happening in Libya. Definitely, we all agree that at the end of the day, when everything settles down, it is the Libyan people who, in the final analysis, select who should be their own leader. But at least they must have a way of doing that selection. You understand? So that is what everybody is saying, that yes, fine, democracy, yes, fine, but it must, in the final analysis, be on the Libyan people, to select whoever should be their leader.
We want to thank you very much, Manfred, for your time this evening.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Doc, wrapping up with you, France has supplied arms to some of the Libyan rebels. Assuming it's been anywhere, won't action be taken against that country?
Definitely, yes. And I think Manfred didn't understand me. I'm not saying they should use Syria to justify. If source for the good should be source for the ganda, then what was happening in Bahrain was worse. Why did the West not go there? Is it because they love the Bahrain king? What about Yemen? They put the Yemeni president there. They love him. So they didn't rush to Yemen. What I'm saying is that when the West wants to help us solve our problem, they don't have to make the problem worse. That's all I'm saying. What Gaddafi started doing was bad. We all said it was bad. Fine. We want his exit. And in his exit, if we try to make it impossible for the Libyans to enjoy a better life than Gaddafi was there, then there's no point in taking Gaddafi away. That was my thesis. But now, like you and I are saying, France is now supplying arms to rebels, dropping arms at some airpoint, meeting rebel leaders in London and places like America has met them, has pledged some money to them. It means you are helping the insurrection to go on. If America has people, have people who are insurrecting against America, would America allow some people to support the other side? I thought there should have been a jaw situation.
Okay.
But what France is doing is against international law. There is an embargo against Libya already. So that embargo stretches to everybody who is a Libyan.
Okay.
And once there is embargo and France is supporting one side and giving the rebels their weapons, what do you expect them to do? To fight, kill each other. And killing each other, is that the support the UN says we should go and give the Libyan people? This is the logic we watching the international scene are talking about. I mean, supplying arms to the rebels means that going on fighting. And going on fighting is killing each other, killing more Libyan people. So I don't think I subscribe to anything that would say that because Gaddafi has been there for 43 years, then more Libyan people will have to die so that Gaddafi gets off. I wouldn't subscribe to that logic.
Doctor, because of our time, we want to leave it here, but certainly we'll be exploring other issues in relation to Resolution 1973 and all. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Vladimir Nchidansu is with the Lagos Center for International Affairs and Diplomacy, a senior fellow there. Earlier, we heard Manfred Ashibuya-Mensah, a lecturer at the Institute of Professional Studies, on the issue of Libya. Some quick tests before we go. I'm happy that some of our politicians are beginning to realize that partisan approach to national development issues will never move our nation forward. David from Kumasi sent in that one. And even animals of the same sex do not cross one another. Why human beings? Francis Banankai, Wild West, sent that one. And Idris Openin Konyate is saying, Professor Jambafo and John Jinapo have made my day. The discussion was non-partisan. I think that is the way we should go in this country. Thank you for sending all these ones. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of Edmund Tete, Christopher Siedu, and Bright Agama, together with Ben Bochi, who sat at the controls, and my assistant, Rebecca Biniwa. My name is Kingsley Obinchere.